As we go to Genesis chapter 50, Genesis chapter 50 there, as you see from your handout. Genesis chapter 50 is turning over there. We're going to look at family forgiveness tonight, and then I believe we'll have one more lesson on this next week as we'll do some review as we've spent quite a few weeks looking at the life of Joseph. Just going to find my notes here in 1 second. Somebody hid them. And we're looking at family forgiveness. Would you agree with me tonight that probably some of the hardest people to forgive are probably family? Does that make sense? I'm not trying to exaggerate things, nor do I look upon it cynically or lightly. I think it's a big thing. And of course, we've got to the point here in Joseph's life. We were reading, of course, his father, his brothers, their whole family moved from the promised land. And they came to Egypt, and they were in Egypt for, we find here in the scriptures, that they were in Egypt. Jacob was actually in Egypt for 17 years before he passed away. So still had some good years there that God gave him, even though he wasn't too encouraging about what he had had in his life. Last week, we studied that God's view is accurate, that there's the need to be truthful about our feelings and the need to understand God's intervention, as Joseph was showing this to his brothers. Here in Genesis chapter 50, verse number 15, in the verse 14, they had buried their father. And then in verse 15, and when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us and will certainly requite us all the evil which we did unto him. And they sent a messenger unto Joseph saying, thy father did command before he died saying, so shall ye say unto Joseph, forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren and their sin, for they did evil unto thee. And now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of thy father. And Joseph wept when they spake unto him. And his brethren also went and fell down before his face. And they said, behold, we be thy servants. And Joseph said unto them, fear not, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring to pass as it is this day to save much people alive. Now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. We see this family forgiveness. And be a lot of strife between families. I don't know if this is true or not. It came from an unknown source. If it is, it comes from 1978, and a fellow by the name of Tom and Hansen in Boulder, Colorado. He sued his parents for $350,000. I kind of think it's true because I understand our American friends sue over everything. But he sued his parents for $350,000 on grounds of, quote, malpractice of parenting. Mom and dad had botched his upbringing so badly he'd charged in his suit that he would need years of costly psychiatric treatment. That was his claim. That was 1978. Now, if any of you lived through the 70s, you'd understand the mentality of some people. But you say, that's crazy. It is. Absolutely crazy. I mentioned it before that my parents were not perfect, but I do not have a single right to be able to blame my parents for the decisions that I made. Every decision that I made was my decision before a holy God. You say, your parents had influence? Oh, they had lots of influence. Sometimes I listened, and you know as well as I do, lots of times I didn't, right? Everybody put up both their hands. We understand this. But I thought, what a shame. Somebody else put it this way. A family shares things like dreams, hopes, possessions, memories, smiles, frowns, and gladness. A family is a clan held together with the glue of love and the cement of mutual respect. A family is shelter from the storm, a friendly port when the waves of life become too wild. No person is ever alone who's a member of a family. And that's why sometimes you'll hear people say they'll talk about their church family, because it's like glue, right? God does great things in our lives. First thing that we want to see here, number one, when we look, go all the way back to chapter 37, when this time in Joseph's life began, and what we see here, number one, is the root of guilt. Why did these men, they're now men, as we'll get to this in just a minute, because by the time, and I'll give you the timeline here in a minute, but by the time we get to this point, my math is correct, Joseph is 56 years old. And I'll show you the math here in a minute. So his brothers are older than him, so his brothers are all in their 60s. Okay? And yet they still carry this burden, this root. What's the root that's in their life? And I believe a large portion of it is guilt. We find in verse number 4 of chapter 37, and when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him. So first of all, they hated Joseph, and it says there, and they could not speak peaceably unto him. So they hated Joseph and could not speak how? They could not speak peaceably unto him. And we mentioned this before, but could you imagine being around that dinner table? It'd be fragmented. It would be a disaster. We mentioned this before, that a lot of times when there's strife in a family, it's like you're tiptoeing around, afraid of saying the wrong thing. You're going to cause an offense. And they couldn't speak peaceably. They didn't have anything good to say to him. Then we find, and as they did this, it says, because, why? His father loved him more than the others. Verse number 5, and Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. So letter B, they hated Joseph yet the more. So it goes from not being able to speak to him. They got that, you know, folded arms, furrowed brows. They go from that to actual hate for their younger brother. Then you get down to all the way to verse 11. And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. And of course, we've read this before, and it's because of the dreams that he had. It says now they envied Joseph, under letter C there. They envied him. Yeah. And now, you know, it's moving from their words to their hatred to their envy. By the time we get down to verse number 18, he had gone off. His father had sent him off to find his brethren. And they saw him coming in verse number 18, and when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. Yeah, they had a name for him, didn't they? He already had a nickname at 17 years old. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit. And we will say, some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. So we find under letter D, they conspired. They conspired to slay him. They said, we got a plan. They planned all this out. How can we do this? And of course, Reuben is trying to deliver him out of their hand there in verse number 21. And by the time you get down to verse number 28, then there passed by Midianites, merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. So under letter E, we find they sold Joseph for 20 pieces of silver. They're selling their brother. And I've mentioned this before. You know, growing up, you might have felt some animosity toward one of your siblings. You might have thought about it would be better if they weren't here. But to actually go and sell one of your siblings into slavery?
I can't experience this, but yep. I have a half-brother. This is yep. what we're talking about here. We're not talking about the same mom and dad.
True.
Right? Yep. Do you wonder if there isn't that same love feeling towards that? You know, I don't know. I'm just kind of trying to figure this out in my mind because it doesn't make any sense.
Well, when hatred takes over, I don't think that there is really any way to make sense. When the animosity is so thick, you know, I've talked to people that have been, we use the word estranged from family, And they say, you know, I haven't talked to my siblings in years. And sometimes there's animosity. Sometimes there isn't any animosity because now we live far apart. We don't have to hear each other anymore. And so they're kind of at peace with that. But here they're obviously in their family social network that they would have had at this time. There's a lot of strife. So to make sense of it, I'm not so sure how to, other than this is so thick, so wrong. So they've got this, right? Or this is building up, conspired to slay him. But instead of his blood being on our hands, now we'll sell him. And even that definitely wasn't a profitable venture. I mean, wasn't like they were getting really anything out of it. I think they were more thinking, we're just getting rid of him. And then it gets even worse in verses 31 and 32. And you know the culmination here. And when they took Joseph's coat, and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in the blood, and they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, this have we found, now know whether it be thy son's coat or no. And so under letter F, they deceived their father. They deceived their father. So again, trying to make sense out of this, I think that's a good way of looking at this. I don't think you really make sense out of it because now the hatred has built to such a point they want to get rid of him, they're actually willing to deceive their own father. You're mentioning here about him being a half-brother. So okay, maybe there's not the love there that there would have been between brothers from the same father or mother, but now they're actually deceiving their father. So that resentment has built up. He loves Joseph more than he loves us. We're envious. We're jealous. We hate him. We can't speak to him properly. We're gonna conspire against him. We sold him. How do we cover this up? And so one sin leading to another. So as we're raising children, what is one of the things, and you probably had this too when you were growing up, when you were at odds between siblings, what was it you were made to do? You were made to go and make it right, right? At the least we had, even when parents didn't understand everything about forgiveness, the least you had to do was go and say sorry. Am I right? You may not have been taught to say, please forgive me, which would be the next step that you should go to, but at least you were told to go and say, I'm sorry. And sometimes you didn't feel sorry, but you were made to say the words, right? No, don't put your hand up. Was I the only one? Okay. I'm sorry. Well, say it like you mean it. I don't want to, right? So sometimes that is there, but we understand that that was put forward in our lives because parents were at least making an effort to say, we want reconciliation. We want to be at peace in our home. But we understand here in this root of guilt that we have the principle of sowing and reaping. And I put there Galatians 6 verses 7 and 8, be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. So we know this principle, we've studied this before, that whatever it is you're sowing and planting, you are going to reap that. Now, this has been over 30 years for these guys by the time we get to chapter 50, and they're still the reaping of this. They still have this root of this guilt, this bitterness against their brother. In Proverbs chapter 17, verse 17, it shows us what should be. A friend loveth at all times, he says, and a brother is born for adversity. So a brother is born to be their for a time of adversity. When adversity comes, you have somebody to lean on, somebody who's in your court, somebody who will has your back, so to speak. That's what he's talking about there. Would you say that, you know, Joseph's brothers were there for adversity? They were there to cause adversity, not to back him up in the midst of it all. In Proverbs 18, verse 19, gives us another proverb. A brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city, and their contentions are like the bars of a castle. Wow. So when a brother is offended, harder than taking a strong city. The contentions he compares them to now are like the bars of a castle. You're not just going to break that down. It's not just going to go away because, well, in time, it'll fade away. No, it won't. And this has been decades for them, and it's still there. In Proverbs 27 and verse number 10, says, thine own friend, thy father's friend, forsake not. Neither go into thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity. For better is a neighbor that is near than a brother afar off. He's talking here about keeping our family close. And, you know, says, not going into your brother's house in the day of thy calamity. And you want to keep those family relations close there. I realize most of the time throughout the scriptures, when you talk about brother, that's basically in the New Testament, is always going to talk about another person who is saved. They're going to talk about that family of God relationship. But here I believe in Book of Proverbs, he's talking truly about the family. And so he's showing them here the root of the guilt that has come upon them. And we know where it came from. If we didn't have chapter 37 and all those details, you'd be going like, what is wrong with these guys? They're grown men. What are they doing? Why are they acting like this? And we're in a world today filled with, and I believe I can say this to our men and to we have our men's camp out here in a few weeks, and we'll talk about some of these things. But we have grown men that don't know how to make decisions. We have grown men that have so much junk in their life that they can't even think clearly. And I'm thinking, we know what our society produces. It produces weakness, but we need men of God who have the Word of God in their lives, and it'll give them strength, stability, their ability to make right decisions. These men did not. So we go from here on the root of guilt. Now we see in chapter 50, in verses 15 through 18, the second thing we see is the reaction of fear. The reaction of fear. And I believe that when fear comes into our lives, it'll result in reactions taking place. Instead of us knowing how to act, we will have circumstances, fear, that'll cause us to react. Something happens and we panic. What do I do? And that's what they have here. They have a reaction of fear that takes place. And what happens here, first of all, we'll see three basic things. Letter A, the brothers have a wrong view of Joseph. They have a wrong view of their brother Joseph. In verse number 15, and when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us and will certainly requite us all the evil which we did unto him. So they had the wrong view. Sometimes family can be misunderstood, right? You ever thought that you understood somebody only to find out? Yeah. Sometimes as adults, you say, I found out, 15 years later that when my brother did that, he did it for a totally different reason. He misunderstood the situation. I found out when my sister did that, there was a whole different scenario of circumstances going on that I didn't know about in her life. And I think they're at the same point. They don't really understand their brother Joseph. They see him second in command to the largest nation in the world, greatest superpower at that time, Egypt. He rescued them from starving, moved them all to Egypt. Yeah, he's protected them, but I don't think they really knew him. I thought of another one. Imagine what it was like for David's family. Remember him as the youngest, being pulled from the sheepfold to come in and be anointed to be the next king of Israel? You think they really understood their brother David? We know they didn't, because in a few chapters later, when he stands before Goliath, one of his older brothers said, where's those few sheep in the wilderness? They don't really understand him. And I think that sometimes happens in families today. We think we know what's going on, but we don't always know what's happening in the heart. We don't always know what God is doing.
What about David taking in Mephibosheth?
King Saul's
family
member there. Yeah, it would have been very bizarre.
That's almost like Joseph's story in a way.
Yeah.
Instead of killing him,
he's going to help him.
Yeah.
As much as David was a man of war, he was a man of mercy. Definitely. Soft heart. Joseph, we see him a lot like that as well. Merciful heart. It's not being, as we'll see here, vindictive, because they had two things that they were wrong about. They said, number one there, he will hate us. He will hate us, they said. You know, where did they get that from? Well, because of what we did to him. So they never truly understood forgiveness. And secondly, he will take revenge on us. Now, I get that word revenge. It says there, and will certainly requite us all the evil which we did unto him. That word requite means to return. He's going to return to us all the evil that we did. He's going to turn that around. What do we call that today? We call that revenge. He's going to see what we did, and he's going to come back. Arr, gotcha. What you guys did to me. Dad's not here now to protect you anymore. Wham. But they were wrong. They said he will hate us. He'll take revenge on us. And then we find under letter B, when we find this reaction of fear, is that this is quite a strange thing in verse 16. The brothers sent a messenger to Joseph. They sent a messenger to Joseph saying, thy father did command before he died, saying. And with this, I will say the best is always face to face. Not a messenger. I'll be very clear. Not a text message. I don't care how many emojis you put in there, you lose emotion in a text message.
No,
no bold, no all caps, no smiley faces, you know, no, none of those other things, and no emails. Okay? I'm going to tell you this right up front, that the emails to correct a problem, just from my experience, they do not work. In all my years of trying to help people, every time that the problem is tried to be dealt with in an email, I failed. Every single time. I have not had a single one that I can say this problem was solved because you had an email. Now, I have seen things resolved on telephone call, so you can hear the voice. Well, what's the best? Well, we just read there in Matthew here a few weeks ago. He said, when thy brother offend thee, what? Go to him, right? So face to face. You get the emotion. You look a person in the eye. You hear the tone of their voice. And if there's a tear there, you see it. There's compassion. There's understanding. Or maybe it goes the other way. There's anger, but you can see it. You don't have to guess at it. I think they were angry at me. No, you'll know, right? And it's far, far better. We want to see good results. So the brothers sent a messenger to Joseph. They sent him a text messenger, okay? It doesn't work that way. We'll send somebody else to do this. No. And then in verse number 18, so they said unto him, you know, the messenger said unto Joseph, forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren, their sin, for they did unto thee evil. And now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of thy father. And Joseph wept when they spake unto him. And then in verse 18, and his brethren also went and fell down before his face. And they said, behold, we be thy servants. Let her see. The brothers tried to make a deal. They tried to make a deal. Folks, our families don't need deals. Our families need forgiveness. They need understanding. They need healing after difficult times. We don't need to make a deal. When you got saved, did you make a deal? No, you got forgiveness from the Lord, full and free. We got the better end, right? Forgiveness, Jesus paid it all. And when we forgive someone else, a family member forgives somebody, or we need to forgive someone, or someone forgives us, it's not a deal. It's freedom. Releasing. It's beautiful. So, you know, there's this reaction of fear that these men had. And I believe it stems from the root of their guilt. And then in verses 17 through 21, we find Joseph in here. I put number three here, the representation of love. Joseph is the representation of love, really of God's love. And it's a beautiful picture here. They're full of fear. Sometimes people come to God this way, full of fear, full of guilt. How do most people come when they need to be saved? Afraid. And when God forgives them, and when they really have that true forgiveness from God, what happens to their fear. It doesn't make all the problems go away, but does it take down the fear in your soul? Does it bring peace to your mind, as he says, a peace that passeth all understanding? Does it actually put a joy and a song in the heart when he comes? And that's what forgiveness does. Now, we know from Genesis chapter 41, verse 46, that Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh. And then after that, there were 7 good years. And then there were 2 bad years until Joseph's family finally comes to join him in Egypt. And then in Genesis 47, verse 28, tells us that Jacob lived 17 years in Egypt, so Joseph is now 56 years old. So like I said, his brothers, maybe a little bit older. Yes?
So Jacob and the gang actually lived quite a few years in Egypt after the famine?
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
They didn't go back home. They stayed.
No, they stayed in Egypt, and I don't have the prophecy in front of me, but God had told Abraham that he was going to bring them out of Egypt eventually. And so this was God's way of taking them into Egypt. Yep, very important. So at least 17 years there for Jacob and much longer for the rest of the family. So here they are, not young men anymore, but we find 4 things about Joseph here. I give these to you. First of all, letter A, Joseph wept. In verse number 17, we find here that Joseph wept. And when they came and they spoke unto him, you know, and they sent this messenger, Joseph weeps. Now, they had seen Joseph weep before, like 17 years before, when Joseph had said to them, "I'm your brother." Remember that? And then they all broke down and cried and wept and hugged and had a wonderful time together. So we find there that Joseph is now weeping when he has this message from his brothers that they are looking, "Forgive the trespass of thy servants." And he's breaking down on this. Now, your family in particular, sometimes when people are crying, we doubt their sincerity. We say that they cry crocodile tears, right? Is that an expression we use? Do you think that his brothers knew the difference? Sure we do. When we're family, a lot of times we know the difference. We know when they're, let me use the term, faking it, when it's hypocritical. And now they see their younger brother weeping. And then maybe they're just starting to get the picture. He really does care. It's not in this for revenge. Not only do we find that he wept, but letter B, we find in verse number 19 that Joseph questioned. He questioned here. Because in verse 19, Joseph said unto them, "Fear not, for am I in the place of God?" So what he does here is he brought God into the picture using a question rather than forcing his family to listen to him. Would you agree with me that sometimes because people are family, we want to force God into the picture and just tell them what they need to know?
Yeah.
We've probably all been guilty of it if you've live for any length of time. You want to tell your family the way it is because they need to know. And I need to tell them.
Amen.
And now let me ask you, how did that go for you? Now, you don't have to give a public testimony, okay? And this is not trying to do this to embarrass. What I'm seeing from this is the wisdom that Joseph had, that he knew how to bring about a question to get their attention, rather than hammer on his brothers, "You dumb lugs. Don't you know I forgave you? Are you guys that dim?" Didn't use any name calling. He said, "Don't fear." He puts in a question, "For am I in the place of God? God did this." He's got their attention now. Not only do we find that he wept and he questioned, but let us see, Joseph reasoned. He reasoned there in verse 20. "But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring to pass as it is this day to save much people alive." So now he brings this reasoning into the picture. He says, "Okay, for, you know," he says, "am I in the place of God?" And then he says, you know, you thought to do evil, but God turned it around and used it for good. Can't you just see what he's done and how he saved all these people alive? How he used me in this position through all of the pain? Joseph got his family to think. He's not telling them what to believe because they're not children anymore. They're men leading their own families. And how does that go when younger brother tells older brother what to believe? Not always very good. Maybe sometimes. But for the most part, we'd say, but what does he do? He gets them to think. Can you see what God has done? Are you watching what God is doing? So he's not taking this on saying, look what I've done. He says, this is what God did. And they did one more thing in verse 21. Now therefore, fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. Last thing he did is Joseph comforted. He comforted. Through all these years, he spoke kindly. Now, what was his position in life? Second in command to the greatest empire in the world at that time. Think he knew how to command? Go get that food. Give it to these people. Get these people over here. Move that over there. Hey, we're taking everybody's land, moving everybody into the cities. Go. Everybody but the priests. You read the account. Took everybody but the priest's land. Now let's get a move on it. Get those things moving. But now he comes to his brothers. He slows down. Switches gears. He speaks kindly to them. He comforts them. I think he's still in grief mode from burying his father. It could be. A lot of times in grief, a lot of people react differently. Sometimes people get angry. But he doesn't. He sees his position now as a brother rather than a ruler. Joseph cannot make his family do anything or believe anything, but he can love them. The guilt and the fear, I believe they were real, but they did not need to continue either to live that way, did they? They didn't have to go that way. I believe he really desired for his brothers to find forgiveness and grow through that. We'll come back next week and we'll look at a review, and we'll come back and go through some of the high points that we've studied over the last several months in Joseph's life. Any other thoughts or comments on the life of Joseph here tonight? Yes, Don.
I kind of thought that he was the creator of what Egypt was at the time because of the famine in the whole land of the world, pretty well. In other words, it wouldn't have been any different than the rest of the world if he hadn't been there and told them what was going to happen. And then put in control of it, too.
Well, it would have definitely been, Egypt was definitely a different country when he was done.
Yeah.
Not the one that I think if we really look at it, we would want to live in, but it would be quite different. Yes?
Two things. One, it looks as if Pharaoh did not push his religion on Joseph. Do you agree with that?
Yes and no, because he changed his name to coincide with his religion. So he changed Joseph's name, and he gave him a wife. So he basically said, Joseph, you have to marry the priest's daughter. So he didn't succumb to it all. He didn't. Okay, just like Daniel and the Shadrach men, or the three Hebrew men, their names were changed, and their religion was forced upon them, but they didn't necessarily accept it all. I think there's similarity there. Yes. I'll disagree with you, and I'll tell you why later. This is actually, if you study this, what Joseph did, this first form of socialism that's mentioned in the, I believe it's probably the first time ever in the world that socialism took over. So that's why I'll disagree with you. But as far as his integrity as a man, yes, I like his integrity. Yeah, I don't like his politics, but I like his integrity. Yeah. That's for sure. Good thoughts, though. Bill, yes?
First of all, I think that Joseph's weeping had everything to do with the fact that his brothers were once again lying to him.
Yeah.
He didn't trust him, and then he was lying to him, trying to love him. They see her do that.
Broken heart.
He already put that under the, because he'd seen it, God's hand and everything, and that was sort of his following. His brothers were still disappointed.
So that's a good point. So you forgive someone, you've dealt with it. And then sometime later, the person that you forgave and thought you dealt everything with, they come back and bring the whole thing up again. What's that going to do? Man, that's a lot of emotions. Causes.
And the other thing is the verses that you use in the middle there.
Yes.
Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born in adversity. It's really talking about friendship.
Yes.
And then so you consider a brother, and then in Proverbs 27:10, it says, thine old friends and thy father's friends forsake not. So he's talking about our close friends and family friends.
Yeah.
Either go into thy brother's house today in adversity, for that better the neighbor that's near than the brother that's far.
Yeah.
So it's really talking about the friends who are become surrogate brothers or sisters.
Come very close.
Come very close, because sometimes a family.
Yeah.
That begs the unit of the family. Because the family is a husband and a wife.
Yeah.
And in husband and wife have parents, they have obligation to,
yep,
to honor through their lives. And they have children that are the immediate family. And so your brothers and sisters are outside that satellite. You have a relationship with them. Hopefully a good relationship.
Hopefully.
Not, but that doesn't always occur.
Does not.
Think of Jacob and Esau.
Yeah.
You know, I'd die for him, but I wouldn't want to live with him. I mean, there is that's the reality of a sinful world.
Yes, it is.
But it's kind of funny, because it's, you know, almost an anti-brother in the sense that it's a cherished friendship and it's foster friendship. And if you can do that with a brother, both siblings,
yes,
it's a blessing.
Real blessing. Yeah.
But not always the case.
Not always.
Not always.
Yeah.
Just sell them and save slavery.
Don't sell your brother. No. These are good points here tonight. So, any other thoughts? Yes, Cindy.
I like with Joseph that he never thought of himself. He always had others he was thinking of. You know, mm-hmm, the only time is when he's in jail, and he just said, remember me, you know, just, you know. But other than that, it just, you can just see all the way along, he never thought of himself. He could have defended himself.
Very much so.
Wife. I mean, you know, yeah, tell the truth of what happened. But, I mean, I don't know, I just, at least it's not recorded anyways.
No.
That, you know, he does not think of himself, and here with the brothers and everything, again, you could, we go like, yeah, you guys were so awful to me, you know. Well, he's in jail for a while, but he doesn't think of himself.
No, and when the way I see it, I think that's a really good point. The way I see it is when Joseph mentions it, he's like a statement of fact. You sold me into slavery, but God, but God. Yeah, really helps us to look at that. Get our eyes up off of ourselves, big family like that. No.
No, no record.
Not that I'm aware of.
Interesting.
When we have the time of Christ, we have Roman historians. There's about 3 or 4 very credible ones that often give stories that relate to things that happened during the time of Christ and rulers and so forth, substantiates the historical record. Very little is in the historical record about Joseph. There's some little bits that allude to him, but a lot of it's not there. But I think we kind of mentioned this before. I think Bill mentioned it, that because these rulers were considered gods, if there was anything that wasn't in their favor completely, you wouldn't want to mention during my reign there was a famine. So it's kind of gets left out of the record.
And the next pharaoh's going to be worse.
Yeah, like I said, just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, few more 100 years. They're going to have their own Bill C-9 coming up here in just a minute. And then it's going to get worse. They're actually going to, you know, kill the babies. You know, you're going to see that in the book of Exodus. A great read, and gives you an insight here into people
actually,
of Israel.
The book itself, the fact that the next Pharaoh forgot about Joseph, doing all the great things to come.
Yeah.
Trying to tell you the way the things went in the history books. That there was a Pharaoh that's helped them survive through a famine. The Pharaoh that wasn't some subordinate.
Yeah.
We know the Pharaoh's names. We don't know the second commandments.
Yeah. It wasn't some Hebrew from way over there that married the priest's daughter. Not to be known. But we'll come back next week and we'll look, kind of look at the mountain peaks of Joseph's life, though you already started doing that for me, so you might want to jot them down. Say, this is what I know about Joseph's life. You might want to think about that. Say, these are the high points. What did you learn from his life?